Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Yud Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we discussed the issue of shtoros, of documents that are signed by either kusim or oivdei kechavim. Kusim are, according to our sugya, are Jews who had converted many years back to Judaism, but their reliability in performance and fulfillment of mitzvahs is questionable. Oivdei kechavim are idol worshippers. We spoke about witnesses that sign documents and witnesses that see the transfer of documents. The signers are called Eidei Chasima, the witnesses that see the transfer, the handing over of the document, are called Eidei Mesira. Mesira means to give over, to hand over. Which witnesses are responsible for the legal strength that the document represents? That's a question that's the subject of a Tanaic controversy between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lozer. Eidei Chasima Karsi, Eidei Mesira Karsi. These are concepts that we've seen already in our past Dapim. We continue now with a discussion concerning a shtar that is written in the Persian language, and the thinking is that it was written and signed by Persians, by non-Jews, and how can such a shtar possibly be kosher, be acceptable? How can a document that reflects a loan having been extended and the lender is now going to use this document as a means of collection, how is that possible? Omar Rava, 8 lines from the bottom of Daf Yud Aleph. Omar Rava, Hai Shtora Parsa, a shtar, a document that was signed by Persian Gentiles that are commoners. We use the term commoners in contrast to, expert or official governmental judges. That figured in our previous sugya, in our previous shiur, where when you're dealing with professionals and officials, they have a reputation to uphold, and therefore there is greater reliability from that standpoint than when you're dealing with commoners. But nevertheless, Rashi makes the point of saying that Parsaim Hedyotis signed the document. Now, this document was prepared in the Persian language and signed by Persian commoners. Demasre Nihale, it was given over Ba'api Sadi Yisrael, in the presence of Jewish witnesses. Magvinon Bey Mibnei Chori. This shtar can be used as a means of collection from properties that are held by the borrower himself. We say properties held by the borrower himself, they're called Bnei Chori, literally free properties. That's as opposed to properties that the borrower may have had in his possession at the time he borrowed the money. Subsequent to the initial loan, that borrower may have sold those properties to lekuchos, to buyers. Now, if you were dealing with a straightforward Jewish situation, a shtar that's signed by Jews and done in a Jewish environment, we'll say Jewish courts, that kind of document would entitle the lender to seize upon properties that the borrower may have sold after he took out the loan. Those are called meshubadim, properties upon which a lender would have a lien. Not so in this case. This shtar enabled the lender to collect from properties that the borrower himself was currently in possession of, as opposed to properties that he had sold after having taken the loan, but before the time of collection. The Gemara now has a series of questions. You can see triangles that appear, and on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh, the structural note, we've indicated Sidra Shel Kushios Birur, series of questions of for clarification purposes, Kedei Lahavin, in order to understand Es Rovo Diomar Shtar Shechos Mo'olov Parsoim Hedyotis, the Nimsar Bifnei Eidim Yisraelim, a shtar that was signed by common Persianers and given over in the presence of Jewish witnesses, goyve mi b'nei chorim v'lo mi meshabdi, that the lender is able to collect from properties in the event that the borrower doesn't pay back cash, so the lender will seize upon his properties, but not properties that are meshubadim, that were sold to purchasers after the loan was taken. The Gemara asks, how can the shtar be used to collect anything? V'ha lo yadi lemikra. The witnesses in front of whom the shtar was given, they don't know how to read that language. How can they testify it about the matter contained in the document, a document that they couldn't have possibly been able to read? The Gemara answers, Bidiyadi, the case of Rava involved witnesses that saw the handing over of the document who were able to read its contents, and hence they can testify about whatever was in that shtar at a later time. And they could testify that the lender had lent money to so-and-so. The Gemara asks, V'ha bo'inon ksav shenu yochol l'zayeh feleko. Here the Gemara is going to be introducing as part of its question certain laws that are unique to the writing of documents. So we'll go along with the flow as the Gemara presents each new law and understand that these are part of laws that concern document preparation. And one of them is what we just read. The writing in a shtar must be a type of writing that cannot be forged. It can't be if it's tampered with, if whatever is in the contents of the shtar could be tampered with, so then it would not be an acceptable shtar. It has to be a type of writing that if any tampering were done to it, you would notice that. A situation that would be a big problem would be if you could, let us say, erase the contents of the shtar. Let's say the shtar said that $100 was loaned from Mr. A to Mr. B. If you could erase that 100, erase the 1 and put a 5 in front of it, it would come out saying $500 was loaned, when in reality $100 was loaned. And lo and behold, you have witnesses that signed the loan. So one of the rules of shtar preparation is that it has to be a type of writing where the parchment is prepared in such a way that of any tampering would be noticeable. So the Gemara says, "Bide afitzon." It was treated with the afitzim is a type of chemical that makes it such that if any tampering is done with the text of the shtar, you would notice it. So far, what have we said? This shtar, this Persian document that Rava said can be used by the lender to collect with, the witnesses that saw it being handed over are witnesses that were able to read the contents. The text itself was written on parchment that you couldn't get away with any forgery, with any tampering. The Gemara asks, but v'hobo ino tzorach shi'achzer yachzir minyonu shel shtar b'shita achrona v'leko. Another law of shtar preparation is that the last line of the body of the shtar, the last line of writing before you get to the signatures has to review in a concise fashion what the topic of the shtar was. And we're assuming v'lekla means that you didn't have that over here. The Gemara says that's not so. B'dimahadir. This Persian document actually had a final summary line to it. Well, if all of these things are in place, you've got witnesses that were able to read the contents. The writing was done on parchment that could not be tampered with. The last line of the shtar reviewed the essence of the shtar. Well, I hachi mi meshabdi nami. And it sounds like it's a totally good shtar. Let the lender be able to collect even from properties upon which he would have a lien, namely those properties that were in the possession of the borrower at the time of the loan and subsequently sold by the borrower. Why do we not allow the lender to seize upon those properties? The Gemara answers, Les le kola, a document that is not signed by Jews does not become well known. Kol means sound or noise. In order for purchasers of properties to be subject to someone else's lien, they, in all fairness, they have to be aware that they're buying properties upon which there is a lien. And then, if they buy it, it's at their own risk. But if they are in a situation where they couldn't know that there was a lien upon the properties, it would not be fair to take away, to collect from the purchasers. They thought they were buying some secure real estate. What puts people on notice that a property has a lien upon it? It is the Jewish witnesses that sign the documents that would have created the lien, namely the loan document. If someone loaned money and he received a shtar from the borrower, then like, I owe you such and such amount of money, and two Jewish witnesses signed it, that creates noise. People talk about it, and people are then become aware that this borrower is a person upon whom others have a lien. Rashi, toward the bottom, Rashi, Les le kola, lefi she'ein chos min Yisrael. Since Jews did not sign it, there isn't any chol. This sahadi dechasimi ashtora, the witnesses that sign upon a document, inun mafki le kola, they are the ones that create the noise, the awareness, the public awareness. Lefikach ein halokech nifsad. And because you didn't have Jewish witnesses signing it, so he cannot be subjected to a loss. Diomale, he can say, Lo havi yodano demishtabid loch. I didn't know that the properties that I bought were bound to you, the lender. Ubeperek sheni amrino di chasimi ole Yisrael torof mimishabdi. In the second perek, we're taught that if Jews signed the document, then the lender would be able to collect from purchasers. The Gemara continues. Notice we have a structural note, a mivneh. You'll notice that we have Roman numerals 1 and 2. These are Shnei Lishonos B'Sheilas Reish Lakish Mirab Yochanan. Two versions of what Reish Lakish asked of Reb Yochanan B'inyan Gittin Sheshemos Ha'edin Kesheimos Akum, where the witnesses that signed the document have names that are similar to names of idol worshippers. So Roman numeral number 1 represents the first version, Bo Minei Reish Lakish Mirab Yochanan. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Edim Hachasumin al haget u'shmoison kishemois ovde kerchovim mahu. And very importantly, we emphasize these are names that signed a get that was prepared in Israel, in the land of Israel, in Eretz Yisrael. The names are names that look like idol worshippers that signed it. Can we say that a get like this will be kosher, provided you have Jewish witnesses that saw it being handed over from the husband to the wife. Omar Lay. So he answered. Now the question, remember, was posed to Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan responds and says, Lo bo liodenu, Ella lucus velus vehichsharnu. We never had a get like that with idol worshippers signing it, except for one, where the signers were had signed the names Lucus and Luce. And we said that the get was kosher because Eide Mesira, witnesses that saw the handing over, were present, Jewish witnesses. Vedavka Lucus Velus, the Loshrich Yisrael Demaski Bishmasayu. And only because the names were clearly Gentile type names, Lucus and Luce. These are names that are clearly not names of Jews, and we wouldn't come to rely upon those fellows to be our Eide Mesira. So there's no risk involved. Avol Shmosa Achrini, but other names, the Shrich Yisrael, the Maski Bishmasayu, other names that are non-denominational type names, they're international type names that anyone would have a name, Jews, non-Jews alike. Lo, there we would not allow, we would not accept a get like that. We've mentioned already many times, the fear is that if we allow a get like that with names that are not shameless mufakin, I might call upon those witnesses that signed it, thinking, oh, maybe they're Jews, and they'll be my Eide Mesira. And it'll turn out that they weren't Jews, but I wasn't able to identify them through the name. Therefore, we take a preemptive measure and say, we're not going to allow a get that's signed by Gentiles whose names aren't clearly the names of idol worshippers. Esvei, we raise an objection from a Tanaic source. Gitin haboyin mi medinas hayam ve'edim chasumen alehem. Divorce documents that come from abroad and witnesses have signed them. Afal pi shishmoisem kishmois ovdei kechovim ksherim. Even though the names that appear in these gitin appear as names of idol worshippers, we say that such a get is kosher. And Rashi adds, very, very importantly, if they're kosher, Rashi says, "Vafilu below Eide Mesira." If a kosher came by Eide Mesira, even if you don't have witnesses that see the handing over of the document to the woman, and certainly if you had Eide Mesira, we're not going to, with the names in the get, we're going to assume were Jewish names. Mipnei, the source goes on to say, Mipnei sheroiv Yisrael b'shebechutzal shmoisem kishmois oivdei kechovim. The majority of Jews living outside of Israel have names like those of idol worshippers. So you see from here that we're not limiting the kashrus of the get to just Lucus and Luce. The Gemara answers, Hasam kediktani taima. As far as that source is concerned, the reason was built into the source itself. Mipnei sheroiv Yisrael shebechutz laaretz shmosem kishmois ovdei kechovim. The majority of Jews living outside of Israel have names that are like the names of the Gentiles in whose midst these Jews live. And we mentioned before that the case that Rabbi Yochanan had been machshir was a case of a get written in Eretz Yisrael. But in a case of a get that comes from abroad and it has names in it that are Gentile sounding names, we can accept it. It's kosher. There probably were Jews that signed it, because most of the Jews outside of Israel have names that are goyish names, Gentile type names. And, in fact, not just Lucas and Lucer. Rabbi Yochanan's ruling was not referring to Gittin that come in Medina Sam, but rather Gittin that were produced in Eretz Yisrael. V'ika di'amri ki masnisa ba'amine. Another version, and this is the second version of what Reish Lakish had asked of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Shlokish's question was, what is the din concerning Gittin that come from abroad and have names that signed in the get that are like Goyish names, like Gentile names? Can we accept it? And Uposhat le mimasnisa, and Rabbi Yochanan answered him from the Tanaic source that it is kosher. The Mishnah. Before we get into the text of the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading. The Nosei, Bal Sherotze Lachzor Bo Mishlichus, a husband or a slave owner that wants to back out of an agency, a shlichus that he appointed. Aleph, get isha, for the delivery of a divorce document to his wife, Beis, shichur evid, a document freeing his slave. Does a Baal have the power to back out from these appointed agencies? Another topic that we will be dealing with in the Gemara is Zochin Laodom Shaloi Befonov, V'ein Chovin Laodom Ela Befonov. The Halacha acknowledges that a person has the power to grant benefit to some receiver, to some beneficiary, even if the beneficiary is not present. In other words, if I want to give my friend a gift, I can call someone off the street and say, take this on behalf of so-and-so. And at the point that the fellow off the street takes the item on behalf of my friend becomes the owner of it. Even though my friend is nowhere to be seen, he's not in front of me. However, if it's a matter of giving someone something that will be to his detriment, that cannot be done unless the receiver himself is present. Alternatively, we've seen in previous shurim a situation where the receiver of the, we'll say, the detrimental element can appoint someone to accept it on his behalf. That would be tantamount to the receiver's presence being right there. Another topic that we will discuss is Hatoifes Lebal Choiv, the Mokim Shechav Laachirim. Let's describe what that is. Let us say that someone borrowed money from a couple of people. He owes money to Mr. A, he owes money to Mr. B. Mr. A has a friend. We'll call him Mr. X. Mr. X goes to the borrower, who, as we said, owes money to Mr. A, Mr. B, maybe others as well. Mr. X goes and takes something from the borrower on behalf of his friend Mr. A, but by doing so, he is preventing Mr. B from receiving his collection. Let's say there were just limited funds around, limited items to collect, whatever. By Mr. X taking something on behalf of his friend Mr. A, he's thereby depriving Mr. B. Now, Mr. X, when he takes the item from the borrower, he's not taking it for himself, he's taking it on behalf of his friend Mr. A. But as we said, he is what in Hebrew we call toifes lebachov. He's grabbing on behalf of a lender. Bemokim shechav lechem, in a situation where others are thereby going to lose out. They're going to be deprived of their means of collection. We now turn to the Mishnah. Ha'oimer tain get ze li'ishti ushtar shichur ze li'avdi. A person says, give this divorce document, give this get to my wife, or give this bill of release from slavery to my slave. Im rotzo lachzer b'shneim yachzer. If the Baal, if the owner, the husband, wants to back out from either one of those cases, he can do so. That is Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. In other words, when the husband slash owner gave the document to the agent, to the shliach, the action was not fulfilled and completed at that moment, but rather only until the document, the get, or the shtar shichur gets to the receiver, the wife slash slave, only then will the divorce or freedom take place. Prior to that, the owner, husband, can back out. V'chachomim omrim begitei noshim, avolo b'shichur avodim. This idea of the husband backing out, that's true with regard to the divorce document. Not so with regard to the bill of release from slavery. The bill of release of slavery, according to the Chachamim, is actually something of benefit to the slave. It's beneficial to the slave to be free. And as a result, as soon as the agent takes the shtar shichur on behalf of the eved goes free. The rule is, as we said before, one can bestow benefit upon someone even without the beneficiary being present. And as a result of that, as soon as the benefit was transferred to the shaliach, the owner cannot back out anymore. He's out of the picture. However, when it comes to something that's detrimental, that cannot be done unless the subject of the detriment himself or herself is actually present. And this is now illustrated. She'im yirtze shelo lozunis avdo rashoy. If an owner decides not to support his servant, as a servant, he can do so. So that, being free, and now being free, not receiving support from the owner, is not something that is a detriment, because even as a slave, the owner had the option of not supporting the slave. So just to repeat that, so now being free is not considered some type of deprivation. He could have been deprived from the mezoinas, from the lazun, from the support, anyway, as a slave. However, v'shelo lozun es ishto einu rashoi. However, not to support his wife as a married woman, for a husband not to support her, he has no right to withhold support from her. And therefore, while married, so she has this benefit of being supported. Being divorced is going to cause her to lose that benefit. And hence we have what the Chachamim said, the rule being, in the case of Gitei Noshem, the husband still can back out because it's a detriment to her. As opposed to the Shichur Eved, there he can't back out because the slave, by being free, that's beneficial to him. And the fact that he's not going to be supported anymore, that's not a detriment. That could have been the case even had he remained a slave. Omar Lohem. Now, Rebbe Meir, who said that even in the case of the slave, the owner could still back out because it was a chov, it was some type of detriment. So, Rebbe Meir says, "Vaharei hu posel es avdo min atruma, kishen shu posel es ishto." The slave is losing out. As a slave, let us say a slave to a Kohen, he was entitled to eat Truma. And now, by receiving this Shtar Shichur, this bill of freedom, he can no longer eat Truma. Just like a woman who is married to a Kohen, when she is divorced, she too loses the right of eating truma. So as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, both the Eved and the Isha, it is to their detriment to receive these documents. Omru lo. The Rabbonim say back to Rabbi Meir, they say something that's very unclear at this point, but they say, Bipnei shehu kinyono. Translated means, well, it's because he, the slave, is his possession. It's his he's owned by the slave owner. Rashi says, Uvigmor meforosh mai ka'omar. If we look in the Rashi, Omru lo mipnei shu kinyono hai de mifsal begita minatruma mipnei shu kinyono de koin ad achshav. That which the slave becomes disqualified from continued eating of truma, that's because up till now he was the possession of the kohen. When he's freed, he's no longer the possession. He's no longer owned by the kohen. Then we'll explain what was just being said. What kind of response is this to what Rabbi Meir had said? Yosef, we continue in the Gemara, Yosef Rav Huna, Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef, Kamei de Rav Yirmiyah, V'Yosef Rav Yirmiyah V'Kominam Neim. You have three rabbis in this story, Rav Huna, Rav Yitzchak, and Rav Yirmiyah. Rav Huna and Rav Yitzchak were seated in the presence of Rav Yirmiyah, and Rav Yirmiyah was dozing off, Kominam Neim, was dozing off, Yosef Rav Huna V'Komar. And Rav Huna said the following, Shma mino midarabonan, we can conclude from what the Rabbonan said in the Mishnah the following. Now, we'll have to figure what did the Rabbonan say. So we look in the Rashi, Shma mino midarabonan di Amri, the Rabbonan said, She hashaliach yitfois hashtar lutzorach evet, viafagav de baal komahadarbe, Vienna od shlucho, utfiso bi'almahu baal korchoi. The Rabbonin in the Mishnah said that when the agent takes the bill of freedom, the shtar shichur, on behalf of the Eved, the owner, even if he wants to back out, he cannot do so any longer. The agent is not considered his shaliach. And therefore, what is this person doing? Tfisa bi'alma, as Rashi says. He's grabbed upon something that at the point he grabbed upon it, since the Rabbonon held that it was beneficial for the slave to be free, the owner can no longer back out. The agent is not considered his shaliach anymore. And therefore, he is like some, we'll call him some outsider that's grabbing something on behalf of someone else. So the conclusion Rav Huna reaches from the Rabbonin is as follows. Hatoifes lebal choiv kona. One who grabs something, who takes something on behalf of a bal chov, someone who had a claim, like a lender. We described this before, and Rashi gives an example. Some guy from the public takes some portables of Reuven for the benefit of Shimon. Shimon had loaned money to Reuven, and some guy comes along and takes stuff from Reuven, which will serve as payment to Shimon, who had loaned Reuven money. And that action of the fellow from the shul grabbing these metaphelin, grabbing these portables, is considered an effective thing. It's legally recognized. So that's what Rav Huna says, that from the fact that in the Mishnah, the agent who took the shtar shichur on behalf of the Eved, he keeps it and doesn't have to return it to the owner who decides to back out. Same thing here, someone from the public that grabs something on behalf of someone else, it's considered an acceptable, a legal possession. Omar le Rav Yisrael bar Yosef. Rav Yisrael, who was seated there, he asks, V'afilu b'mokom shechav lachirim? Is this true when the grabbing on behalf of, we mentioned, on behalf of Shimon and the properties of Reuven, even where that now is going to deprive a third party, a Levi, let us say, from collecting his loan that he had also extended to Reuven. Amar lei in. So Rav Huna says yes, that even when someone else is going to feel a loss, experience a loss, because of the actions of this guy from the shuk, from the public, from the market, coming and grabbing on behalf of his friend, even though it's going to deprive someone else of collecting his loan from the same borrower, it's okay, it's legitimate. Where do you see that in our case? Well, the owner himself, who decides to back out of freeing the slave, he can't back out any longer. So he is losing. The Baal, the owner, is losing out as a result of this fellow taking the Shtar Shichra on behalf of the Eved. Adahochi, in the meantime, Isar Behu Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah woke up. Omar Lahu. Rabbi Yirmiyah says to those seated there, namely Rav Huna and Rabbi Yitzchak, Dardiki. Dardiki literally means children. Apparently, Rav Yirmiyah was the elder amongst them, and so he refers to them as the young ones. Hachi Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Thusly says Rabbi Yochanan. And we didn't mention the use of the diamonds before, but on the side under the Mivneh heading, these diamonds, Hatofes, Shnei Deos, Betoifis Lebachov, Bemokum Shechav Lachirim. We have two opinions regarding this matter of someone collecting items or payment on behalf of his friend at a point that it will cause someone else to lose out. So Rav Yirmiyah says, HaTofes Lebachov, Bemokum Shechav Lachirim Loi Kona. The grabbing of a source of payment on behalf of your friend, when that's going to deprive other lenders from collecting their debt, so what you grabbed on behalf of your friend is not legitimate. You're not considered in possession of it on behalf of your friend. You'll ask, well, what about our Mishnah where we saw that the person that received the Shtar Shichur on behalf of the Eved, that was effective, and the Eved will go free, and the owner who's going to lose out now, as we saw, he wanted to back out and he can't back out. The Mishnah case is different. Kol ha'omer tenu. The owner, in that case, said to the agent, tain, and tenu is in the plural, tain shtar shichruz eliavdi. When you use the word tenu, or tain, ka'omer zichu domi, it's like saying, take it on his behalf. Now that's a lot different than some guy from the public knowing that his friend has money owed to him by some borrower, and he on his own went and took something from the borrower on behalf of his friend. There were no instructions over there. The borrower didn't say, give this to your friend who loaned me money. Therefore, the cases are very different. And you can't conclude from the case of the Mishnah where the owner instructed the agent to take the Shtar Shichra on behalf of the slave. Rashi, three lines from the bottom, Koimer Zichu Domi, V'Einze Kishar Tofes. This is not like some other case of someone grabbing something on behalf of his friend. Elabala So Shliach Liskois Boy. Here the owner himself instructed the agent take on behalf of the Eved, even though the Eved didn't know. We have this concept of I can take something on behalf of someone, even though the beneficiary himself isn't present, is not aware, he's not present. But once again, there's a major difference between this case and the case of simply Toifes Lebaal Chof. We continue in the Gemara. We continue with a point. The point goes till the last line, at which point the Gemara will then be doche, will reject what's being said. So what's the point? Omer of Chizdah, Toifis Lebachov, V'mokom Shechav L'Acherim. This very example, this very situation of someone taking an item from someone who owed money to a few people, and he, this fellow from the public, took it on behalf of one of them, thereby causing a setback, a loss to the others. Bonu l'machlokis Reb Lezer v'Rabbanan. This brings us into a Tanaic controversy. Disnan. We have a source that deals with the payah tithe. People who have fields that produce vegetation, trees that have produced fruits, a corner of the field is to be left unharvested. That is called payah, and that is left for the poor to take as a tithe due to the poor. The source deals with an owner of a field that goes to the corner where payah was left, and he collects, he harvests fruits from the payah, and he declares, "I'm taking this on behalf of my friend the oni." So he's not keeping it for himself. That would be totally prohibited. But he's taking it on behalf of a particular poor man. The source says, "Disnan mi she liked es apeah." Someone collected payah from his own field. "V'yomar rezu leploni oni," and he declared, "That which I'm taking is for so and so the oni." Could be a friend of his, a relative of his. Rebbe Lezer Omer Zochalo. Rebbe Lezer says that's effective, and that the that particular oni now becomes the owner of this particular produce. Rechachomim Aimrim. The Chachomim disagree. Yitnenu l'oni hanimso rishon. The owner that collected pay on behalf of a particular oni, he can't keep it for that oni. He has to give it to the first poor man that walks by. This is an example of Toifes the Bachol b'mokum shechav l'achirim. Is it not? I'm taking the payah. Now, there's a limited amount of payah there. It's if I take it for one poor man, I'm thereby depriving the other poor people from taking it. Yet, Rebbe Lezer says, that doesn't matter. It's effective. You're collecting it on behalf of one. Even though others are deprived, it's nevertheless legitimate. The Chachamim disagree. So it would seem then that the issue of Toifes l'Bachov b'mokum shechav l'achir was a machlokes tanoim. Omar, Ameimar, Vitema, Rav Papa. Ameimar, some versions have Rav Papa. Here you see this analysis rejected. Dilma lohi. Might be not so. Notice we've used a double underline to highlight the expression of Ad Kan, where at each opinion, as Rebbe Lozer and Chachamim, will be analyzed in such a way that what they say by payah doesn't shed light on what they would say in the case of Toifes L'Baal Chov. The Gemara. Ad Kan, it could be that, well, let me read that again from the beginning. Dilma Lohi, could be that this, the attempt to parallel the case of Peah to the case of Toifes L'Baal Chov, B'mokum Shechav L'Chirim, is not a parallel. Ad Kan Lo Ko'omar Rebbe Lezer Hosam, it might be that Rebbe Lezer said his din, his, say, his leniency with regard to the leket that the owner is taking on behalf of his chosen oni is legitimate, Ella, because the migu di boy mafkiluhu lenichse v'avioni v'chazi lei umigu de zochi lei lenavshe zochi lechavrei. In the case of an owner of a field taking the payah, there was a potential there for the owner to have declared his field hefker, unowned. Detaches himself, he dispenses with his properties, he declares them unowned. What happens to that guy, the owner? Well, he's now a poor man, he doesn't have any property. So since in potential he could become himself an oni, an impoverished person, and as such he would be entitled to take the tithes of the poor. And since, in potential, he could have taken the payoff for himself, he can take it on behalf of someone else. What difference does it make? If I could take it for myself, If that would be legitimate, I'm taking it for myself. So I'm taking it for myself, and I'm on behalf of someone else. That's migu dezochi lavshei. Since he could have taken it for himself, he can be zochen on behalf of someone else. That's an analysis that's unique to the case of Peah, where you were dealing with his, with a fellow who was being zochen on behalf of someone else, was dealing with his own field. Aval ha'cha. In the case of Toifes Lebal Chov, Mokom Shachay, Chav Lechem, lo, we don't have that analysis where Mr. X takes something from the borrower on behalf of Mr. A, and thereby causing Mr. B to lose out that as a source of collection. Rebbe Elazar would not acknowledge Mr. X's rights to take on behalf of his friend Mr. B, Mr. A in our example. Fiad Khan, Loko Amri Rabbonon Hasam, and with regard to Peah, it could be that the Rabbonon maintain their position of Lo Zacha, where the Oni doesn't benefit from the owner's taking the Peah on that Oni's behalf. It could be that the Rabbonon said that Lo Zacha Hasam, Elo Dichtiv Lo Selaket Leoni. That's a quote from the Pasuk, and it's darshened Lo Silakate lo leoni, where the Torah itself is saying you cannot take on behalf of an oni. In other words, it's a gezeiras hakosav preventing the owner of a field taking pay on behalf of some other oni. Aval hachalo, but in the case of tofes lebal chov, even if it's mokum shchav lecherim, we don't have a pasuk that prohibits someone from acting thusly. So the Rabbanon, again, we see, according to this whole rejection, that the case of Peah has is one thing, and the case of Tofes Abachov, Mokom Shchav Lacherim, is a different issue. Rebbe Elazar, Hai Lo Selaket Mai Ovidlei, Rebbe Elazar, who says, according to this analysis, that the owner can take the Peah from his field on behalf of his friend, what does he do with this Pasuk? What does he learn from this Pasuk? He needs it for the following. Lahazir Leoni Al Shelo. If a poor man happens to have his own field, Rashi says on the second line from the top, Lahazir Oni Al Shelo, Oni Haroi Lito Peo, Vieshlo Sodeh. A poor man who has so little income that he's legally entitled to take Peo, but he just so happens to have his own property. That poor man has to leave a section, a corner of his field, unharvested on behalf of other aniyim. And that's what Rebbe Elazar sees in this particular pasuk. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.